This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're tuned in to Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Good morning, I'm Tan Chung Han, and with me in the studio is K. Gunasegaran, founder of Wealth Street, which is a financial advisory firm. And Guna is also a certified money coach. Good morning, Guna, and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Han. Thank you for having me here.
Oh, it's our pleasure. So now, you're here to talk about behavioral advice coaching. Now, we know that you are not just a certified money coach, you are also certified in behavioral finance. So talk to us about behavioral advice coaching. What is it?
Yeah, thank you, Han. Well, in the spectrum of financial planning, behavioral advice is one of the domains where today in US, they found that what is making people tick, what is making people to follow advice? And they found out that the normal traditional finance of asset allocation, you know, all these traditional finance are there. But what really brings the client to execute in terms of what they want to achieve? So there's big names like Vanguard. I'm sure you heard of Vanguard. Yep. And Ameriprise Financial are the peers in US who have been using for the last 10 years. And even Vanguard has made a study on quantifying an advisor's alpha. Mm. And in the research, they found that there's a potential 3% where the advisor can add value. And guess what, Han?
What?
The normal traditional finance of asset allocation, rebalancing, or spending withdrawal strategy during the process only account up to 150 basis points.
Hmm.
So you might wonder, where does the balance 150 comes? It's actually behavioral coaching.
Hmm.
So Vanguard has done a lot of studies and they come up with a lot of models as to how can they able to handle clients' decision-making process.
Okay. So just to be clear here, you've got your asset allocation strategy, right? But then what perhaps compounds matters is that then people either get scared and so they tweak their assets or they pull out the market too early. Is that what you're talking about when it comes to the behavioral side of things?
Han, thank you for asking the million-dollar question.
Hmm.
You know, in fact, let me just share the component of behavioral advice.
There we go.
One is the traditional finance, which most people do. Second is the psychology. You just mentioned about fear, jittery, getting outside. So this psychology part handles their values, their beliefs, their hopes, their fears, and so forth. This is interesting, which I'm very passionate about, which I'm going deeper. The third part is called neuroscience, where neuroscience encompasses how the brain works when you're fearful, how the brain basically helps you to make decisions. And how does this neural pathway in your brains are actually sometimes helping you, but most of the time hurting you when it comes to making a financial decision.
Right. So if our psychology, if our neuroscience, as you put it, is actually what's hurting us, then would this make the case for more robo-advisors as opposed to human advisors?
Interesting question. Well, robo has got its place. You know, it depends on the type of client that basically wants to engage robo, meaning they could be very disciplined, they know how to handle emotion, you know, they don't get jittery, and they won't have a specific outcome from a robo. In my experience over the last 10 years having this firm, I noticed that 90% of the people don't fit into a robo platform.
Hmm.
Why? Just give an example. We all have our daily life to manage our work and et cetera, et cetera. Would you agree, Han, that unknowingly we have unbuilt stress within us?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right. So coupled with this, when you've got your personal stress going on, and then when markets are volatile, things are not going as you expected, does that increase the tension and I call it the emotional agility on an individual?
I would think so.
Okay. But do they have a gauge to understand the stress?
Probably not. It's all very fluid. Yeah.
Okay, very fluid. So therefore, under the behavioral advice coaching, people like us in Wall Street, we have a tool and processes to able to gauge by asking questions, profile, and exercise to understand where the client is.
Hmm.
We do not just ask a question without a process. And all this, as you said, I'm certified behavior advisor. It's all from US and it's all patented. And we use this over the last 7-8 years.
All right. So what are these tools and processes? And I guess these tools and processes are aimed at trying to gauge your client's risk appetite, correct? Not quite.
Actually, not quite. Thank you for saying hi.
Okay.
Well, the risk appetite comes under your risk tolerance.
Okay.
Okay. Then you move further into risk capacity. Okay, most people don't do in the market analytics risk capacity. But after passing risk capacity, that's all in the technical under the traditional finance.
Mm.
As I'm showing you, I'm sure you can see here right now, we have an exercise that talks about, we show this to our clients and say that, okay, hun, as you move into my office, I just, you know, talk to you for a couple of minutes and show you this. Tell me under these emotions, how are you feeling today? I think that's give a specific directional thoughts to the client. Say, hey, this is how I feel. So once they've seen this, which I'm sure you're seeing it right now, and that will say that we expand and say, hun, tell me why are you disappointed? Could you expand? So we then get into his emotions and understand or try to understand as what is triggering them to feel in this manner.
Right. And because this is radio, I have to explain to my audiences what I'm holding in my hand. So I have here this card with different groups of words here under broader categories. And some of those categories are happy, sad, confident, scared, excited, angry, helpful, frustrated, playful, tired. And under all these categories, they've got, I'm guessing, about 15 to 30 different subcategories, different words to help you explain your emotions. Okay, so let's say I've identified to you, right, Gunab, that today I'm feeling angry. Okay, so how do you translate that word that's on that card to my investment portfolio?
Okay, wonderful. In general, Han, most people will talk about just portfolio. But what happens is, going back to the situation where people are jittery and pulling out of the market, we have another model here, as you can see.
Okay, Guna's handing me another card here. This is more suited for TV, but yes, go on, Guna.
Okay, so this is a model as to how people think and how do you bring perspective to the client in relation to where they want to go. So they have frame one, which is where it talks about the real... So frame three talks about the real self, who they are right now, the behavior, the current behavior, where they are.
Okay. There are three boxes here. One is labeled values, and that's your ideal self. Then in the middle, you got goals. And then on the right-hand side, you got behavior, which is your real self.
Correct.
Okay.
So we start off with the real self as to why they are behaving now and what is their thoughts, feelings, and action and emotion, which I've just shown. Then we would reflect back about their values, they are who they are, their principles, their belief. Reason being is this. When you do a financial planning, all these are done in your discovery meeting, where you want to go, what you want to do, and so forth. But along the journey, it is not being reflected whenever you make an informed financial decision. So our role as a behavioral advice coach is to help them to reflect. Most of the time, they are reflexive, meaning, again, going back to the brain, allow me to share this very important, which I've been spending years now on this. We are being prototype, meaning we have certain level of thinking pattern, the way, mode of thinking. And because there are chemicals like dopamine and cortisol, cortisol is where the brain produces a chemical when you are fearful, when you're in anger, when you're defensive. So when you're engaging the client, it takes some time to bring him to a calm manner. To do that, you need to reflect back as to what is their intention when they see you in the first place, as to what they expect out of you as a financial advisor, as a coach, to achieve in their financial planning objectives.
Now, Gunnar, we got to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about some of these specific biases or some blind spots. And then let's talk about some active steps as to how to mitigate those factors. Okay?
Sure.
I'm speaking to K. Gunasegaran. He's the founder of Wealth Street, which is a financial advisory firm. And Gunnar is also a certified money coach. This is Ringgit and Sense. Stay tuned.
Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Thanks for staying with us here on Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Tan Chung Han, and still with me in the studio is K. Gunasegaran, founder of Wealth Street, which is a financial advisory firm. And Guna is also a certified money coach and also a certified behavioral advice consultant. All right, so now Guna, in the first half, we spoke about what is behavioral advice coaching, how the psychology and the neuroscience behind our financial behaviors may complement or perhaps detract from our investments, right? So now, earlier you're talking about some of the pitfalls that some of us may encounter when we're trying to grow our wealth. Talk to us about some very common pitfalls or blind spots or biases, whatever you may call it, right? What are some of the most common patterns you've identified among your clients?
Thank you. Actually, that's a wonderful question, Han. And allow me to share. There are two types of, you want to categorize as, they are cognitive biases, and they are also emotional biases. Mm-hmm. But I'll just touch on a few of the biases which are very common that I see in many of the clients or investors. They have this thing called confirmation bias. Confirmation bias are things that they have done research, they know certain information, you know, and they tend to anchor into that confirmation bias, and they seek for news or research to support a decision which they have made in their mind.
That's right.
So when that happens, what's happening is they're not being open, they're not seeing a holistic picture, they're not seeing what if this or what if that, what happens if this happened, what am I going to do? So when they search for this kind of information, then the decision that they make are biased towards that. And the repercussion sometimes that they don't see it when it's coming, it becomes very traumatic to them.
Mm. So, for example, if someone just loves property, they will just find any kind of data point that supports the idea that property is the asset class to go as opposed to equities, etc., right? Is that what we're talking about?
Thank you for saying that. Something similar, which I've handled on the clients who are into property, they find that property is physical, they can touch, feel, and see. So there is a biasness that they interpret into the neuroscience in terms of communication to the brain. But then they don't understand that when things doesn't go as they expect to that particular asset, and let's say they are heavily weighted into property, and as you can see, markets are not that good, therefore it will impact them tremendously and they will have to learn a lesson from there.
All right, cognitive bias, great stuff. Yeah. What are some other pitfalls or blind spots that you have helped your clients overcome?
One of the things that I always find that it repeats all the time called recency bias.
Recency bias.
Recency bias has got a different dimension, but I'll tell you the simple layman term. Assuming that market has corrected by about 20%. Mm-hmm. Okay, we have seen markets up, we can see markets down. Because that right now, as you can see, volatility, there is a correction, and volatility is depending on how each individual investor or client is interpreting. It's very different and what goes in the mind. Therefore, because it's correcting, therefore they might think it's a doom day. And they will tell you this, Guna, I'm not sure to what extent this correction is going to be. Let me be out of the market and feel that when the time is right, I'll come back. Mm. Let's assume the client is right in this discussion. But then most of the time, you can see that when markets are going, they'll even tell you, I also see some of the news. Let's see how far this is going to go. Mm. So because of that biases that they carry and they couldn't see or make the right decision, I won't say best decision. There's no best decision. It's a right decision. They tend to lose out on the opportunity when things started to bounce back.
Mm. This is the pitfall or the potential pitfall when it comes to people trying to time the markets. And we have heard this bias, as you call it, quite a fair bit from our various guests here on this program. And sure. So their remedy is to tell their clients, hey, just stay in the market. Mm. No matter when it goes up or goes down, you just stay committed to your investment plan. Mm. Is that the same thing you tell your clients?
I would say yes to some extent. But again, what we stress in Wealth Street is this. When the clients are emotion, okay, that's a saying. It says like this. When the emotions are high, logic doesn't get in. Mm. And it's very crucial. Reason being is, when the cortisol is controlling the way you think, feel and act, whatever logic you give does not go into the mind. So the process is, how do you calm down them, the client's emotion, based on thoughts, feelings, and physiology, then you can slowly bring back to where, as I said, about their goals and objectives and so forth. And then back to the stats as to say that, look, market always corrected. you know, 2007, 2009, and it always came back. So then when you make sense, the other cognitive will then able to understand that. You know, that's the thinking faculty.
But does logic always successfully override the emotions? Or because at the end of the day, fundamentally, we are emotional creatures, right? You know, we are creatures of habit as well. So how successful has that pitch been to Malaysians? Again, are they more open to logic, or are they, at the end of the day, still ruled by emotions?
Han, thank you for asking the question. Really, it's a very important question that we handle in Wellesley. One must understand this thing called financial personality, which I'm seeing showing you another stuff.
Okay, so okay. Gunnar is now handing me four oversized Lego bricks of sorts. At the very top, it's red color. It has the words, be brief, be bright, be gone. Then next down, it has the words, give me details. And then thirdly, involve me. And finally, at the base, it's show me you care. So what do these four blocks represent?
Okay, this is what I call, or what we have been using, called financial personality. Going back to the question is, how successful is this in relation to the Malaysian culture and Malaysian mindset? Very important. I find that Malaysians have got a culture, but we all are different when it comes to financial personality. We all think, feel, and act differently based on different information and the way we respond to circumstances.
Correct.
You did mention about the four things that he says, be brief. And so there are people who wants to make decision. You give them the right data, they will say yes or no. Fine. There are people who are too much into data and they want to analyze and they need so much to convince themselves to make themselves okay. But there are people who say excited, yeah, I want to achieve that kind of return. I want to have this kind of lifestyle. Involve me. That's the part you just mentioned. Mm. So you make them the kind of excitement going back to the values, goals, and mission, and you handle them. But this is the last part. This is the beauty. The last part says, do you care for me? These people just entrust you based on the relationship that you've gone through with them. And they say, Gunnar, I trust you. I know you'll do the right thing. Take care of me. So it's a different stroke to different people. With, of course, all this is done by questionnaire and profiling them.
I think I'm in the second group there, you know, give me details.
Not sure.
I'm set to be an analyst, so I need those data points though, you know. Show me you care. Not so much. I don't care. All I care about is the returns at the end of the day. Coming back to these four different groups, right? Would you say, broadly speaking, most Malaysians are in the show me you care category, or which category do they largely fall into place?
Wow.
Because we note the lower levels of financial literacy here in Malaysia, right? So many guests have come on this program saying that, look, you know, Malaysians, they don't really know how stock markets work. They don't know how the financial markets work. They just want those returns at the end of the day. I would assume, and correct me if I'm wrong here, that most of them would be either in the involve me or show me you care groups. Am I right?
Okay. If I answer this question, I may be wrong. Reason being is, it depends on the sample of people that I dealt with.
Okay, what about your clients?
Okay, my clients, I would say that 50% of my clients fall into the give me the data.
Okay.
All right. 25% of them are involved on the be brief, you know, and give me the decision. The rest 25% fall into I care and I trust you.
So
there's a variations to that. And each time when the client comes, we need to look at his profile and see where is he before even we engage the conversation.
Right. Because I would think that it requires a higher level of financial literacy for folks to even seek out the services of Wealth Street or any financial advisory firm, right? Whereas the masses out there in Malaysia don't have that prerequisite knowledge. So they are not even out there looking for Wealth Street or any of your peers, right? So now, what can Wall Street then do to tap into the mass market there, whereby you got many Malaysians who just don't know how to properly handle their finances?
It's a difficult question to answer. But when you say masses, what would you want to reach out to the masses then?
We hear about how the social safety nets here in Malaysia is not adequate and people are just poor when it comes to handling their finances, right? And there has to be a lot more education that needs to be done.
Agreed.
Right? So what is Wealth Street doing on that front? Or are you just catering to a well-to-do segment of society?
I won't say well-to-do. We have a range bound of clientele that we serve. Mm-hmm. But to answer your question directly, I think people like Bank Negara and SC would need to do a lot of workshops and forums engaging financial planners who have got different skills and talent to educate the investors so that they know there are diverse skills that where they can go to should they want to. Example, each of the clients are different category, so the needs are different. Then based on the forums and discussions and all that, then they will say, okay, this is where I want to belong. In America, the Financial Planning Association does a lot of forums and discussions to all states, and everybody take a stake in that. So Wells is ever willing to contribute our part in that area.
All right. With the little time that we have left, Gunnar, let's talk about some active steps then as to how those listening right now can, again, try to overcome their biases, be it cognitive or what was the other one?
Recency bias.
Okay, recency. Okay. So what are some active steps that those listening right now can employ to try and overcome their biases, ultimately so that their financial position can be stronger in 2019?
Okay, wonderful. For a layman, I would say this, like this emotional intelligence, be aware of your thoughts, feelings, and action as to what are you thinking most of the time, which you know from childhood until now, you have certain patterns of thinking, the way you think. That comes under personality. So what I would say is, look for other views that you normally don't think and see whether these views or research or data, would it help me or hurt me in moving forward to where I want to go in terms of my financial goals. Because we have a lot of personalities within us. We need to think differently. They need to move out from the normal way of thinking.
And then how do they make that connection? You know, once they have identified their personality traits, then how does it translate into their ringgit and cents?
Okay, so what happens is they need to look out for financial planners. Even in this case, I would say definitely I'll promote Wells Street to help them to come up with a plan looking into their values, beliefs, and system, and with their objective, to come to a plan and say, okay, these are the actions that we want to take. And the most important thing, we talk about behavioral coaching, is that clients need to be evaluated and help them see where the progress is. Like a blood test. You do a blood test. You take a remedy. Eventually, the doctor will see you and say, you are progressing. You need to continue doing this type of... We call behavior modification. And see, that is resulting in where the client wants to achieve.
Right. So either get advice from an expert, a certified expert, or you can go look for robo-advisors, maybe. To each their own, right? Well, Gunnar, that's all the time we have. Thank you so much for your time and your insights. That was K. Gunasegaran, founder of Wealth Street, a financial advisory firm, and also a certified money coach and certified behavioral advice consultant. I'm Tan Chung Han, and this is Ringgit and Cents. Stay tuned because we've got the 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up, and after that, Enterprise, all right here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.